Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. He appears to have gone to France. The films are Titain, Susanna Adler, and The Many Saints of Newark. What were you doing? Hi, David. How are you?
Doing okay, Jill. How are you doing this week?
I am well. Thank you very much. What's the French connection?
There really is no particular French connection here. Just the three movies that happen to be out right now. Titain is a French and Belgian production. Belgium has had for a very long time a really adventurous film industry. Susanna Adler, on the other hand, is very much a French movie. And then we finally end up today in Newark, New Jersey, with The Many Saints of Newark, which is being marketed as a Sopranos story. But let us get to that in a moment. Let's begin with Titain. Titain, which is our French-Belgian movie, and the title is just French for titanium, the metal, and it arrives on the scene with quite the credential. It won the top prize at the Cannes Film Festival this past spring. Now, I have to say, as somebody who used to go to the Cannes Film Festival every year, year after year, one of the interesting things about that, because you hear about what won this prize and what won that prize, and always especially what won the Palme d'Or, the Golden Palm, the top prize, and it's like big news and all that, and it is. The prize is decided by a jury, and the jury is really quite separate from everybody else at the festival. They're sort of off doing their own thing. And sometimes the movie that ends up winning the top prize from the jury, and sometimes movies that win other prizes from them, like the acting prizes, for example, are just astounding to everybody else who was there at the festival and seeing all the same movies. Because people say, oh, wait a minute, I didn't think that was any good. Nobody I knew thought that was any good. What's going on here? So it's just kind of interesting that the jury, which is composed of very big celebrities from the international cinematic world, is very often sort of operating on its own track. Now, as it happens, Titain has just opened in the United States. And it is, by the way, I should mention that it is directed and co-written by Julia Ducournau. And it is opened here, and it's been getting pretty mixed reviews, I think, for the large part. So it's another one of these cases where people are saying, well, wait a minute, I guess I sort of see what the jury was thinking, but maybe not exactly. So anyway, it's a little bit hard to sometimes parse out why a movie gets the top prize at the Cannes Film Festival, or for that matter, at any film festival. I was for many years on the selection committee at the New York Film Festival at Lincoln Center, and we didn't give any prizes. And I always thought that was an excellent policy to get into the festival itself, as it makes you a winner. But no, Cannes gives prizes, and sometimes the prize seems weird, like the top prize to Titain this year. Anyway, Julia Ducournau, who directed and basically wrote the movie. Her previous film was a movie called Raw, R-A-W, which dealt with cannibalism. And oh my gosh, I guess that Titain doesn't exactly deal with cannibalism, but it's it's one of these movies that sweats and strains and tries so hard to be subversive and transgressive and outrageous that after a pretty little while, I started to say, oh, enough already. It's just not really that interesting. It's a movie that is full of energy and full of eccentricity and full of all kinds of weirdness and over the topness, but it just never really connected with me. So here is what Titain is about. It begins with a little girl in the car with her father having a terrible automobile accident. And in order to save her life and make her sort of put her back together and keep her on an even keel as she grows up, they put some sort of a titanium implant into her cranium. So that's where the title comes from. She then grows up and she becomes what I guess you could politely call an exotic dancer. And there we see her dancing and bumping and grinding and doing all the kinds of things that exotic dancers do at a pretty upscale exotic dancing place. And then a little bit after that, we find out that she has a very strange relationship with cars. And I'm not going to go into the details of this. But anyway, let's just say she has a very strange interlude with an automobile, in an automobile, which impregnates her. She gets pregnant by a car. Okay. Now, something else happens, too, which is that she kills somebody. She murders somebody. It's a man. It's a man who comes onto her and maybe about to rape her. So we can understand that. She pulls this sort of hat pin that she wears in her hair out, and she kills this man. However, she then goes on to have strange relationships with cars, and she goes on to kill plenty more people, and not just in self-defense. She now just seems to be somebody who kills people because she likes to kill people. Okay, so there we have it. We have a woman who has been knocked up by a car and who is a serial killer. Then she decides she's got to hide because, after all, the police are after whoever the serial killer is. So how does she hide herself? She sees a poster about a little boy who went missing quite a long time ago and has now grown up. And the posters were put up around. They have pictures of what the boy would look like now, trying to help people maybe someday still find this little boy who's been missing for something like 20 years. She disguises herself as the little boy, which means disguising herself now as a man. And she infiltrates herself into the household of the disappeared little boy, where the husband and wife, who are kind of a middle-aged couple, have themselves a sort of a challenging relationship. So as you can tell from my little synopsis here, there's a lot going on in this movie. And a lot that goes on in the movie is kind of sensationalistic. And actually, I found after a while, sort of sadomasochistic. One of the priorities of the woman director of this movie, Julia Ducournau, appeared to be wanting to put the woman star of this movie, Agathe Roussel, through a whole lot of very, very profound and outrageous and over-the-top physical challenges. It's a movie that's about suffering, it's about deception, it's about all kinds of unpleasant things, which can be really, really interesting when treated in a sensitive way in a movie. But if there is one thing, Titan, it is not. It is sensitive, I would say, in any way at all. Nor did I find it nearly visually inventive enough or cinematically inventive enough to justify all the outrageous things it was trying to do. As I said at the beginning, Jill, it's a movie that sweats and strains and just tries so, so hard to shock us and be outrageous that after a pretty short time, I just started just saying, enough already. So Titan has its fans. There are people who see it as a wonderful study of family, of the older couple who take in the young disguised person who isn't really the person that she is claiming to be. And it has all kinds of trendy kind of resonances with today's world of transsexuality and transgender and this and that. But I just found the whole thing a very noisy and sensationalistic horror show, and I can't recommend it. I didn't much like it. On to our next film, which is a French film, Susanna and Lair, and it could not be more different from Titan. Now we have a movie here which was written and directed by Benoît Jacquot. He's a fine French filmmaker, and he has been on the scene for decades. He's really good. He's made a lot of, you know, important movies over the years. And in this case, the movie is based on a play by the very, very great writer Marguerite Duras, a very major French writer of her time, a very major French 20th century writer. Also playwright, also filmmaker. And as a filmmaker, she was extremely avant-garde, extremely experimental in her approach. I interviewed her years and years ago, back in the 70s, and she talked about her ambition to create what she called a cinema différent, a different cinema. And her movies, again, were very, very adventurous and very, very unconventional. For example, she would make an entire movie where all of the dialogue was off-screen. And you would see one thing on the screen and you would hear people talking and the movie would emerge from that. She made another movie where it is two people talking about a movie that has never been made. A whole movie like that, a whole feature film. So I'm just emphasizing she was very, very avant-garde, very adventurous in the things that she tried to do. And her novels could be pretty adventurous too. I've read quite a number of them over the years. So now we have Susanna and Lair, which is based on a play by the great Marguerite Duras. And it stars a wonderful actor, Charlotte Gainsbourg. And she is the wife of a millionaire who is having a very strained and unhappy relationship with her spouse. And she has gone off to a magnificent villa which she has rented on the French Riviera. Oh, the views of the Mediterranean in this movie are just astonishing. And the place itself is pretty amazing. Big, one of those big, big, sweeping, gigantic old villas with this magnificent view of the sea and all of that. So anyway, there she is trying to work out what's been happening to her in her life with her very unhappy relationship with her husband. Her lover shows up. Her current boyfriend shows up. Turns out she hasn't had many of those, but he shows up and they have long conversations, and an old friend of hers shows up and she has long conversations, and she talks on the phone with her maid back home, and she wonders and sort of hopes that her husband will call, but he probably won't because he's been having an affair with somebody else. It's that sort of movie. It's one of these French movies about French people doing the kinds of things that French people do in the movies, having affairs, having lovers, having unhappy relationships, trying to work things out, and that sort of thing. Now, I said that Suzanne Enler, which of course is the name of our main character, played by Charlotte Gainsbourg, couldn't be more different from Titan. This movie is so restrained. It is so elegant in the way it's made. The camera work is slow and smooth. The dialogue is slow and smooth. And this is a movie which is driven entirely by dialogue. We rarely get outside the villa. And when we do, it's just sort of to the beach front down below the villa. And then we're back up in the villa again. The cameras sort of talk and walk around these big, empty, largely empty rooms, stand posed in front of the windows and the balconies opening over the sea, and talk and talk and talk. So what they talk about is reasonably interesting if you're interested, if you get interested in the psychology of these characters. But mainly it's a movie which is driven by dialogue, which is driven by elegantly written, sinuously shaped lines of dialogue and elegantly executed, sinuously shaped camera movements. I found it after a while kind of tiring. It's not all that interesting a situation. The characters are not all that interesting, but it's such a refreshment to see an old-fashioned French art movie like this, where, again, everything is driven by the dialogue, by the personalities and psychology of the characters, and it unfolds slowly, and it never tries to shock you or impress you with its virtuosity. It just unfolds in a very gradual way. So if you want a movie that is quiet and full of language and full of beautiful, elegant images, not fancy ones, but elegant ones, then Susanna Enler is the movie for you. I hope that it gets, you know, a good viewership in America. It's not a great movie, but it's a really good old-fashioned French art movie, and I had a nice, relaxed time watching it. Now, our final movie for today, once again, couldn't be more different from the other two, The Many Saints of Newark. And this is, of course, a prequel to the legendary TV series, The Sopranos. And it has those characters back before the years that this TV series covered. Now, like so many jillions of other people, I saw all of The Sopranos. I watched the whole thing. And I think it's a good show. I think there are plenty other long, really, really first-rate TV series of that era, which are better. I prefer The Wire by a lot to The Sopranos. I prefer 6 Feet Under by a lot to The Sopranos. In some ways, I prefer Boardwalk Empire to The Sopranos. You know, but still, The Sopranos was legendary in its time and remains a very important artifact from that sort of, I think we're still in a sort of a golden age of series TV, but the Sopranos is one of the ones that touched that off. So again, The Many Saints of Newark is a prequel to all that. It was directed by Alan Taylor, who directed some episodes of the show, and you know, has directed other things too, Game of Thrones, for example, and he's also a feature filmmaker. And The Many Saints of Newark was co-written by David Chase, who of course was the creator, the original creator of The Sopranos, and deserves enormous credit for that. So The Many Saints of Newark takes us into Newark, New Jersey, and we meet these characters when they were much younger than they are on the show. Of course, we do meet Tony Soprano. He's a child in the first part of this new movie, and he's a very minor character in the first part of the movie. He becomes sort of a supporting character, a secondary character in the second half of the movie, played, interestingly, by Michael Gandolfini, who is the son of James Gandolfini, now the late James Gandolfini, who, of course, played Tony Soprano in the series. So it's quite fascinating to see the son of Michael Gandolfini playing the young teenage Tony Soprano. And he, by the way, is very, very good, kind of an unconventional looking actor, and I think he does a very, very nice job of it. I never really took to James Gandolfini in the original series. He was fine for what he did, but I never took to him. In a ways, I find Michael Gandolfini kind of a more interesting actor. Also, really importantly, we have Alessandro Nivola in what is really the main character of the movie, Dicky Maltasanti, who was a sort of a mentor to the young Tony after a while. Other people are in the movie. Michael Imperioli from the series shows up in it in a smaller role here. You know, various other people. Really importantly, we have Ray Liotta, who's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful actor playing a dual role. And I was very glad because when one of his characters gets knocked off, he shows up back in the movie again as the other character that he plays. And I'm always happy to see him. He's a really interesting actor. Speaking of Ray Liotta, I still associate him more than in any other movie with Martin Scorsese's great movie in which he played such a crucially important part, Goodfellas. And in many ways, The Many Saints of Newark reminded me of as a less excellent Goodfellas. It has the same pop music on the soundtrack. It has the same Ray Liotta all over the place. It has a character named Paulie. It has a lot of things in common with Goodfellas. And I think Goodfellas is a much, much better movie. That said, I really like The Many Saints of Newark. In most ways, I think it's as good as the series. Again, I found the series, The Sopranos, a little overrated. And so I find The Many Saints of Newark just as good as the original series. And hey, it's less than 2 hours long. So for the price of a feature film and the time investment of a feature film, you can see The Many Saints of Newark, relive your fascination with The Sopranos, and I think have a pretty good time at the movies. So that's my pretty darn diversified story this week, Jill.
Diversity is everything. Thank you very much, David Starrett. Films in Focus, the films Titan, Susanna Andler, and The Many Saints of Newark.